So Nia, the Makbahs, it happens.
Sigalit Landau was born in Jerusalem in 1969 and studied in a bilingual and multicultural environment in Israel, the UK and the US, but without ever losing sight of the Judea desert and the Dead Sea. After several years spent studying dance and a period of military service, she began her artistic career, mainly focusing on sculpture. Her first works were exhibited at the Vita David in Rotterdam, Herzliya Museum in Tel Aviv, Documentary in Kassel, and the Venice Biennale, among others. Since the late 90s, Landau has reinterpreted her sculptural work through the use of the body in performances and videos. She works recursively with symbols, images, and narratives as therapeutic forms of the wounds provoked by her historical, personal, and cultural identity. Sunia talks to Sigalit Landau about her work and about the methodology she uses to develop her personal vision of the world. She also discusses the inherent contradictions and connections between biography, territory, and politics in her work, and analyzes the role of art as the language that can account for this convergence.
I think I suffer from the shifting, from not knowing your borders, not knowing what art world you're even, what sometimes your own context, and not knowing what you are as a artist, sometimes as an agent, as a prophet. I mean, what's your role? So when you do something in your work that actually defines, here we are, this northwest, southeast, so it, sometimes it does feel like a ritual or something that links you to the past and gives you some confidence, or a kind of futuristic maybe ritual. But I think it's not very humdrum. It's maybe metaphorically I'm talking about every day, but something about going and seeing art and being there, and this is not YouTube kind of stuff. You cannot experience my work just by seeing images. When I say I am a second generation artist, my family came from the Holocaust. This is what I had in my mother's milk. This is coming to terms with who you are. It's happening later in life. I did art without absolutely wanting to know what I want to know what I am, not who I am. But saying this, you know, you have to understand, you have to give keys for the audience to see what's this massive responsibility that I carry without knowing on my back when I'm making art.
The relationship between video and sculpture.
Video gives us an opportunity to show transformation, and materials like sugar, salt, water, sand, they are constantly in transformation, and this is a good meeting point to do an act to camera. You quite control everything except that I don't like to edit, so I don't like to manipulate at all, and let the experiment or the dance begin and end, and it's, you know. But it's quite a medium, because the video lets it live, and it does live on. So sometimes I shoot it one way, but then I project it in a completely different way, and the context changes, because the countries I'm showing my work give a lot of context back into the pieces, into the choices of works. So yeah, I like ephemeral. There's something ephemeral. On the other hand, if you go to my website, you'll see that I actually weld and build and try to do things that are tactile and very physical, and I really lack sometimes in video shows. I really lack, there's a lot of body there and there's a lot of movement and trying to find life.
Biographical background.
I'm the firstborn of two parents. My father was in the camps. He came to Israel in the early 50s. My mother, her parents escaped Vienna. The family there was victims, and she came to Israel in the 60s, and some families didn't talk. My grandfather, he did talk a lot about his war experience, and there's just these subconscious things that second generation kids, they have to succeed. They have to be very, very able to survive. And Israel, for people who came in the 50s, was not an easy place to survive. They were refugees. They didn't have the land. They didn't have the language, the money, the know-how, how to get along. And one of my hardest experiences was going by law to the army. there being a woman started being even more of a deficiency in survival skills because you're nothing to do with a war machine. I tried to make films explaining soldiers how to cope with their army service in the first Intifada. I think there's just a lot of healing that needs to be going on. And I don't think that you can ever get it right. How do you heal people who 30 years ago, 40 years ago left the camps, or people who are haunted by stories? And how do you teach young kids? And when do you teach them about the Holocaust? So I think my life is quite a good experiment in what not to do. I'm now dealing a little bit with these things, and why in the end your home isn't very safe when there's this much of a bruise and of a sadness.
Memory and childhood.
The only home I have is memory and childhood, maybe. That's why I know to define it. I don't even think I ever played as a child, and my daughter either. It's something that has to do with it. There's a healthy way to grow up, and then you're practicing your childhood. But when you're not a child, when you're a child, but you're too aware. So I think now as an adult, I'm looking at these hula hoops, these things. I did actually when I was a kid, but looking at this thing that's a game. But it has other connotations and it has other results, and looking at the game with a knife is a game. But we all know that it never ends, and we all know that the generals, the politicians, they think they have rules and they have regulations and they have politics, but you can, when you do it this way, you're talking about the philosophy of it, I think. So you're a step behind and you're looking at them as children. They should see this. They should see how this will never end, and this is just moving. And today you gave Gaza back, but then you'll take it again, and then you'll threaten to be without a bridge, you'll be with a tunnel. So it's looking at grown-ups as playing as kids.
Contradictions.
On the one hand, I'm repeating a lot, and there's loops, and there's futile acts. On the other hand, when there's a dialectic, that means that there's a tension and linear. This is not like a circle, this is like a line between. So I can only say that this is probably how I construct my reality. There's one thing that I know, there's another thing that I want to achieve. There's tension between them. And there's sometimes a point where you give up and you understand that this is going to go on forever. If it's a nightmare, if it's a political situation, if it's an art issue that is, even art can disappoint us and fail us. So I admit to contradictions, not just dialectics. It's much more than dialectics. It's this contradiction between wanting, to take something like water and build a temple of pipes, which have already nothing to do with water. They have everything to do with living around places where every family has its water clock and is part of a system. So it's just like a vocabulary. You can say one thing and as a truth and take the same building blocks, the letters, the sentences, the words, and superimpose it with the complete opposite, and without anything being a lie, it's all truth for me. So even today when I try to speak there and give a linear idea or some kind of feedback or speak phenomenological what I did, and there everywhere is like this feeling of sound being mixed and movements being repeated, so it's like, it's also a kind of, I think, it's also very symbolic that you have to come to this completely non-religious church. It's something in even like Zen, even if it's, I'm not Zen and I don't know much about it, it results somehow. The truth comes out, to come out the way that it works, interact, you're being very liquid. So my last film is just a guy, how he's making this Palestinian very, very special, magical pastry. So it's completely different. And I showed it in London. And the other day we took a boat into the Dead Sea with this cake, and we traveled to the border between Jordan and Israel, and we had breakfast. We all went into the salt water, it was very salty, and ate the sweet cake with a friend from Jordan, and we made this kind of imaginary territorial border. It's another contradiction. You're in the middle of the sea, and this is a border, and you're trying to make some kind of island of sweetness inside a crazy world.
Barbed hula honest.
The most relevant piece about tension between an erotic and a tantalic force is when I'm doing barbed hula on the beach. It's a hula hoop, which is like a dance, I call it a belly dance, but I turned it into a work that has barbed wire. The barbed are not hurting me, they're just like threatening to hurt me. And it's for me a kind of a game with the memory of how at first when you learn about the Holocaust, you have these images burned into you as a child of people who are disowned from their clothes, from their home, from their identity this way, and they're in a camp. The strangest thing, the metaphor I was working with, was how I take these components and build my own space, and I called the piece Nest. The first thing I thought about is this is like how would somebody like me try to build a nest, like a bird.
Mermaids, erasing the border of Ascalon.
I'm really playing with the audience, because what they're doing, they're scratching the beach. They really want to arrive somewhere, and they're in this liminal place between out of the frame into the water again of the Mediterranean and then back onto the beach, trying to make a mark and to remain on the beach. And it is the same beach where the three guys are playing with quite a lot of pleasure a dangerous game with the knife, and with that you feel that if you're looking at it and it's almost the knife is on your own foot, the place that I chose for the game of Ascalon, place where there is a real border. I wanted to cross it. The army, they let me cross it just very slightly. And I'm saying, look, children are playing on this side and on this side, the same game, but they can't play together. And look at what they're learning. What is their game? Their game is simulating statesmanship and erasing and making new borders and conquering land.
Working on the Dead Sea.
Another story is the Dead Sea, where you're going to this amazing history and prehistory of a rift valley. It's really a story of a place which I hang on to for 10 years of experimenting with it. First, because it's the lowest place, and because of the buoyancy, the water, which is so dead, actually brings to the surface everything and makes everything float and look quite beautiful. Because of the light situation inside a very, very deep valley, there is never any shade. There's always sun, but there's no shade. It's very special. So I started this way to study just the scientific facts. And after that, I made a monumental film, which you can't see in Makba, which consisted of 500 watermelons, which I connected and made a raft. Then I went on to start making objects. One of the objects in the show, it's called Worcester. It's a pair of shoes, which came out of a few weeks of being slowly becoming very heavy, crystallized objects.
Working with archetypes.
I do work with archetypes a little. You know, and I do think that the women that are trying to make it to the shore, it has to do with modern day women who are just trying to, for the basic kind of thing to happen for them in their lives. And maybe they're together, but they're not exactly collaborating. Maybe I'm in dialogue also with a certain aesthetics of history of art and painting and the way women, you know, I'm not just critiquing, I'm reenacting. But the way you see the women, and they were doing it dressed, and then I said, okay, whoever agrees, I must take a take now without clothes, and they were doing it undressed. And when they're undressed, they're somehow much more inside the mythology. And I do believe in mythology. I mean, even though it's not a cheap kind of trick to take off women's clothes on a beach. Because when things work, they tend to be beautiful. It's harmony in the way a body moves, when if it's work or if it's play or if it's...
Inhaling and exhaling.
There's either the nature, the blankness of a beach, the blankness of a middle of the sea, there's something like that's extremely spacious and like a canvas waiting for act or for a mark, or a hideout. A hideout is like exhaling and inhaling. You inhale or you escape. This is also in the Bible. You go away from civilization and there you have this plain setting maybe you can say that I'm not really letting the inside, for instance, of a home. Things I don't understand. I don't know anything about running a home, being at home. There's a few works that there's one window, which a woman comes out and paints the window black, but not the window, the whole wall that's behind the outside of the window. It relates to a tradition, and it's a certain window, and it's one shot. But for me, this is where I try to keep it simple and keep it pure. I'm really whispering here.
Art and politics.
My work has no slogans, and my work has no political, concrete activism inside it. And I don't know the truth. I prefer to talk about history and about my yearning for the future and my hope for the future, and affect the future with my contribution, that's art. So you understand that I'm looking for something that's called normal, a normality. And maybe it's for more and more people around the world, something that we don't really know what it is anymore. But that's also political. And what my body suffered when I had to go and be Israeli here and the army and a student and whatever it means, globalization and trying to be part of the global art world, it does go through your body, trying to be a woman, trying to be a mother, all these things, what you try, you fail. This is politics. It's inside you. I mean, some people can get on with it, but my system, my psyche, it was always a difficult kind of, it was always like a membrane of resonating hardship and turning it into art and healing myself with it.
Artist versus researcher.
I wait for this moment where my subconscious gives me something that I can believe that is real and not something that I collected as a researcher. When you research your own subconscious, sometimes you know, click. This is something, a moment that combines something that came out. It has a direct dialogue with the political statement or point or point of view, but it came out from this abyss. Plus magic, plus to soften it up also to turn it into something that's culture, not just art. That it's like, I like check these things that come, but you're right. But then you make your environment by making a web. You try to make an environment where the right things I believe in will surface, and then I go and try and make them. Also there's a gap between subconsciously what comes out and then technically what can happen, and that's where the craft comes in and the struggling and fighting for your art and the melancholic side also is there a lot. But yeah, I'm a big believer in shutting your eyes. It's time to shut off and see what you really know.
Influences.
Yeah, I'm influenced by Louise Bourgeois, by Vito Acconci, these artists, Anna Hamilton, people who made installations in the 90s. They really invented virtual spaces. It was influenced by cinema, by building a whole place that has its own rules, that's alternative to what is. And look, the world has become a place where you don't know what is. There's layers and layers of reality that somehow absorbed also through computers that get me personally quite paranoid.
International reception.
Most of the work I did in the last 4 years, people in Israel don't even know. The olives haven't been shown yet, so I don't know. They're really, the years that I did this big watermelon monumental piece and the barbed hula, and this is like my identity in Israel, more or less. I have my language, which for them is also quite international. The language, the way I will tell our story, rather than other artists who will tell it, go to the checkpoints or go in a way, like in a documentary way.
A bridge between borders.
I'm planning to do something. It started off now by a sailing across to Jordan and small island, and maybe people will come sailing to the island, and this will be a bridge that will be based on people coming and going. And it's a big deal because it's a rough area and it's rough to get all the permits. So I'm inside struggling, something between an island, a float, and a bridge for us to cross between Israel and her neighbors. the neighbors also are Palestinian, because the Dead Sea has three shores, Palestine, Jordan, and Israel. And when you come as an artist and you're being very practical and you're searching for a symbol and an object, no way you're going to come up with something that's based on justice and on the past. The past is really just there to give us grief and get us stuck. So it's a reconciliation object, and it's a technical challenge. And I'm getting technical people from Jordan and engineers to be technically involved with details which are physical. And that's a way to bring things to life. This bridge is a very important moment for me. And I really have to make it happen. I really do.
Makba.cat.
Don't think that the world is a no man's land made for wolves and for foxes to rob and raid, the heavens but there to hide from God's view, the mists to conceal the criminal few, the soil to soak in the blood that is spilled. Don't think that the world is a free-for-all place. No no man's land, no, no jungle, no waste, for measure than weigh are all the things on this earth. No tear and no blood drop are shed without count. No spark in an eye is put without pain. Of tears will grow rivers, of rivers an ocean, of oceans a flood, and of sparks will spring thunder. Don't think there is no justice nor judge. The world is no man's land. Isaac Leib Peretz.